So good to be here. Greetings from Adelaide. Of course, Sue and I go along to our Elizabeth meeting in Adelaide. And I want to start off by saying today that it's not actually all about donuts. Okay. Oh, we've got a bit of disappointment already there. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. That's the way that it happens. So our topic today, of course, we've got DNA, donuts, and God's amazing design. Now, you might think, well, where did you come up with a topic like that? It was given to me. It was gifted to me from Pastor Kevin. And I thought, why would he say about that? I think he just wanted to put me on the spot and just sort of see, I've got a few shakes of heads. Yeah, that happens all the time. Yes, we can sort of tell that's around the place. It was actually just really interesting that during this week we've been hearing a little bit from Sister Leslie about doing some DNA testing and research and things, and she's found other relatives. Now, I think that Pastor Kevin was actually looking to do exactly the same thing, so that he could go and put in his DNA and see if there's anybody actually would admit to being related to him anywhere. And so when they did all the testing, it was really quite an amazing thing. They found his DNA. So if anybody has DNA just the same as that, you know that you're related. Okay? But that is the thing with Pastor Kevin. It's all just donuts. That's all. As you dig deep into him, it's just donuts. That's all that you find. Now, we're going to look at a couple of things today to deal with God's design. A couple of things about donuts. For those people who worry about the donuts sometimes, the center is 100% fat-free. Now, the healthiest part is actually the whole. But the thing is, you have to eat through the rest of it to be able to get there. So, if you go and have donuts, you can sort of claim there's a whole heap of it that's actually really quite good for you. Won't do you any harm at all. Somebody said, I could give up donuts, but I'm no quitter. Okay, we're going to get... and we just found this. Somebody was delighted to discover nature evolved a bat that looks exactly like a jam donut. So we're into donuts. Everybody loves donuts, of course. We're talking about God today and as a creator. And just a couple of interesting things that we find in the creation. Now, I'm a high school science teacher by trade, and I always found it really quite interesting that when people would turn around and they want to challenge me on things, and they say, you might believe in God, but I believe in science. And I said, well, hang on, where does that put me? I'm a science teacher who believes in God. Is there something wrong with any of that? And I asked them, what parts of science do you believe in? And it actually didn't take them very long. They didn't really know and understand what they said they believed in. We're going to look at a couple of interesting little things here today. You may have seen some of these things before. The claim from the Bible was, God says, I'm the doer of it all. I've done everything around about. You can't put your finger on anything that he hasn't had something to do with. God created the heavens and the earth. So just a couple of scriptures here. He's made the earth by his power. He established the world by his wisdom. And he stretched out the heavens by his understanding. For those of us who got a little bit of a physics base, there's actually this little phrase about stretching out the heavens or stretching them out as a curtain. And I actually see a whole heap of things in nature, even the idea of people getting an idea about an expanding universe and the redshift that's in all of that. I'm not going to go into that right now because I know that sometimes when people start talking science, people just blank over and say, I wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. So I'll leave that. A bit later we'll get back to donuts, but anyway, we'll keep going. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made. This is a challenge to this world. What do you believe in and why? It says, and all the hosts of them, it says, by the breath of his mouth. He did all of those things. by the breath of his mouth. It says, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground. And he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. He's the originator of all things, including you and me. We don't know what that looked like when he was back there and dealing with the dust of the ground and forming Adam. But he makes a claim. He says, I made the earth and I created man upon it. He says, I and even my hands have stretched out, here's this again, stretched out the heavens, and all their host have I commanded. So there's a big claim. Now, a lot of people will try to argue straight out, I just don't believe in God, I'm an atheist. Well, you haven't explored knowledge deeply enough yet then. You're missing on some things. We're going to look at a couple of things that are really quite amazing. Parts of you and me. Not many of us are made up of donuts and so on, but we all have blood in us. And I love this from, when we start to have a look about us and the processes in our body. Now, we know the big story that people try to present to us is that we're all here by accident. All here by accident. There might be some here who cause accidents. There may be all sorts of things. But we want to look at this idea of blood clotting in you and me. It's actually really, really complex. Do you know, when I was at high school, in the biology book, there was a chapter entitled The Simple Cell. And all they talked about there is, oh, well, we've got this jelly sort of gear in there. It's surrounded by a membrane. And if it's a plant cell, there's a cell wall around that. And in the nucleus, there's a little control center that seems to take care of everything. And inside that, they knew about DNA at that point. But they said, oh, well, it's a sort of fairly simple sort of little package. It's not simple at all. To do with blood clotting. Now, of course, to do with blood clotting, we need to be able to make blood clots. If anything is missing or is defective, it would only actually take a little puncture in us. And, you know, it happened at night time. We go and we lay down and we would just bleed out all over the floor. And that would be the end of us. Of course, if it kicks in by mistake, well, you end up with blockages all through you. You can't afford just to be sitting there right now and all of a sudden say, oh, goodness me, oh, how silly of me, all my blood just clotted. That wouldn't really be helpful for any of us at all. We'd just sort of, oh, what do we do about all of that? So you get strokes, heart attacks, all these things. It's got to work correctly. Now, when we talk about a blood clot, so say you do cut yourself and your blood starts to clot, well, we've got this substance called fibrin. We get this sticky fibrous mesh, and that sort of stops the blood just sort of flowing out everywhere. So we've got this fibrin. Now, the thing is, the fibrin itself doesn't exist in blood. If fibrin just existed in your blood, then all your blood would clot. It's created by the action of another enzyme. It's called thrombin. And that promotes the conversion of something else, a fibrinogen, as a plasma protein, into fibrin. Oh, also all we need is thrombin to be able to sort of kick it all off. The problem with that, the thrombin is not present either. Because if thrombin was present, that would kick off the fibrin and you'd have a clot and you'd be clotted all through your body. That's formed from prothrombin, a complex process. You've got blood platelets, salts, and substances that are produced when tissue is injured. But you guessed it, prothrombin can't actually be active in an active form there. Because if it was an active form, then it would kick the next stage, which would kick the next stage, and you'd all of a sudden be sitting there and all your blood would be clotted and it wouldn't be flowing through you anymore. So we've got all of these things so far. Even these couple of things, if any of those factors is deficient, then you don't get the clot formation. Or if any just sort of happened just to kick in, but it needs something else to get it to kick in, But there's more than these things. It's more complex than this. People are able to, it's actually an amazing thing. People are actually able to map all of the enzymes, all the chemicals and things that are in your body. This triggers, this triggers, this triggers, this triggers, this. And in the end, you're able to end up with a blood clot. So far, we've only looked at those four things. There's all these other things, and we're not going to go into all of those. So this sequence, alteration and acquisition of function, there's this cascade happens. Something triggers it. There's a sequence, 28 different proteins and enzymes that have to be there just so as your blood can clot correctly. When you get a cut, there's actually, it's a protein that's only found on the outside of cells, not in contact with blood, that triggers the cascade. Of course it has to be like that. The triggering enzyme has to be not in contact with blood. It's only when some event happens and you get a cut and then all of a sudden this enzyme is, oh, now it's my turn to go to work, and goes in and causes reaction, 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 and we get taken care of. And then we don't just bleed out all over the place. It was an amazing thing. But of course, after you have been injured, there's another whole set of processes to heal you up again. Of course, you form the clot over the top, and so then we need this other process for the clot removal. So once the blood vessel is healed, you don't want that clot there any longer, and so you get another system, a fibrinolytic system, that breaks down the clot. Another enzyme is in there, and it dissolves the clot away, and you end up, well, you end up with this other skin formation as well, and so on. Now, isn't that amazing? Isn't it wonderful how accidentally all these things just happen to be there all together at the same time? Now, by accident, you could have, you know, what if you had 16 of the enzymes were just sort of present somewhere? Well, it's not enough. It wouldn't work. Well, if we managed to make 17, you can't start with one and say, a little bit down the track, I'll become useful. You can't actually do it that way. Charles Darwin himself said, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. Absolutely break down. The blood clotting in our body that is typical of the complexity of the things that are in our body, unless it all happened to be there and all ready to go, so the switch could be turned on, bang, now it's all ready to work, it's not going to happen. In all sorts of other places in our body, you know, if we deal with our eye, there's about 40 different sequences of processes that go on that without them all being there, our eyes wouldn't work, and you could come up with all other parts of our body. So no evolutionist has been able to explain this. How could that process actually get set up from the beginning? Because it can't be set up little bit by little bit by little bit. It can't be done that way. So it's how all the cluster of proteins involved came to be inserted all at once, because that's the way that it would need to be. There's no story that actually really effectively accounts for it all. But as I said, the blood clotting, that's actually typical of the types of processes that are happening in our body all the time. In a little while, just to do, we will have something about blood If you remember the number 100 trillion, you're going to hear that a little bit later on. It'll explain why some of you feel tired all the time. We'll deal with it. Michael Behe, some people here would have heard of him, of course, a biochemist, and he came up with an idea of irreducible complexity. If you want things to work, then there are certain minimal things that need to be there all at once to make it work. But just to do with this type of process, he said that the odds against the inactive precursor protein and its activator. So we've got something that's inactive, we need something to activate it. He said the chances of them getting together just accidentally would not be expected to happen even if the universe's 10 billion year life was compressed into a single second and relived every second for 10 billion years. You wouldn't expect this just to happen, because all of these things, all of these proteins, they're really complex things. They're not simple things themselves. They have to be produced in our body. We're going to look a little bit, just in a little while, some of the mechanisms that are happening all the time in you and me, because all of these enzymes, all of the proteins in our body, they're being produced all the time. They're not just there from a big set to draw on. They're being manufactured all the time. And you don't need just the proteins. You need all the machinery to do the manufacturing. All these things. So Fred Hall, I do like this one. Now, he had a couple of funny ideas about where life came from. But to do with being on the earth, he was able to say, look, there was accidental processes and so on. There's not enough time for this to happen. He actually has some funny idea that life must have actually been seeded here from outer space somewhere and so on. But anyway, he said that anyone, even with the idea of the Rubik's Cube, would conceive the near impossibility of a solution being obtained by a blind person just moving the cube faces at random. So if you have somebody blind doing a Rubik's Cube, now, I can see, and I don't know how to do a Rubik's Cube. Who's learnt how to do a Rubik's Cube? Oh, a couple of clever people around the place have done that. He said, now to try to imagine, though, because you can imagine, actually, one blind person going and going and going. Eventually, you might actually get them in a solved form. Then they'd move forward because they wouldn't realise it was solved. Now, he says, well, but imagine 10 to the 50th blind person. Now, you can't do that, and neither can I. 10 to the 50th. You think, well, 50 is not a big number. 10 is not a big number. 10 to the 50th is a really, really, really big number. I'll give you an idea of it in a moment. Imagine 10 to the 50th blind person, each, all of them, with a scrambled Rubik's Cube, and try to then imagine the chance of them all simultaneously arriving at the solved form. No, that's not going to happen. 10 to the 50th, I had to do a little bit of a calculation and looked up a little bit. 10 to the 50th blind person, how many is he talking about? Well, if you turn around and you got the whole volume of the earth and you packed that with people into that much space. You packed that with people. You're not even started on this. If you're dealing with the volume of the earth and you started packing people into earth shape, no, I don't know why you would do that, but anyway, if you did that, you would actually need over 6 billion Earths to get that number of people. So it says you try to imagine all those blind people with a Rubik's Cube, and all of a sudden, bang, they all hit the solved form. It says if you can imagine that happening, that's the chance, just by random shuffling, that you might end up with one of the biopolymers on which life depends. His conclusion to this, the notion that the biopolymers, but the operating program of a living cell, could be arrived at by chance, nonsense of a high order. We hear a lot of nonsense of a high order when people sort of come up with various things and say, oh, isn't evolution wonderful? Look what it's made. Nonsense of a high order. We'll keep going. Blood clotting is actually evidence that there was a creator behind all of it. In Proverbs chapter 20, it says, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord made both of them and all the other things to do with us. When we look at a human being and their life, of course, we've got the whole body, and the whole body is made up of organs, and the different organs are made up of different types of tissue to make the organs. And each of those tissues are made up of really quite specific cells. And then when we go down into the cells, and of course, they've got all of their structure and all of their processes. And what is amazing, that people have been able to look in, the intellect of some people being able to look in and come up with methods where we can see what's on the inside and how it's all happening. We're going to look at a couple of those things. But before we do, foolproof donuts. Some people might want to be able to make donuts. Well, I looked up a recipe, and there's one that's foolproof. Now, it was interesting. I got foolproof donuts because at one time, it was after prayer and fast. I had a lot of people back to our home. And I thought, I will make scones. I will make scones for the brethren. And so I went and I got all the ingredients and I mixed them all up. And I put it in the oven. And I thought, this would be wonderful. People would be really impressed. David made scones. And I looked. It's not quite what I expected. I was looking in the oven. And then after a little while, I re-announced, I said, I've changed my mind. We're having biscuits. Now, I think the ingredients were sabotaged. That's what I believe. Now, Sue assures me that they were not. But we have a look. Now, you might have made donuts before. Well, there's a number of different recipes for making donuts. We've got things, you have flour and baking powder and so on. There's other types of donuts you can make and use yeast and so on. If we had a look at that set of things, we might find, well, if we left out the salt, we might still get the donut to sort of work. It might not be quite as tasty. There's not much else you can leave out and still end up with a donut. You can't just pick one ingredient and say, oh, there's one ingredient, or I'll just get any two of those and put them together and I'll make a donut. It's not actually going to work. You need to mix them all together and then cut them all out, and then you're going to cook them all up, and then you're going to put a bit of gear on them, and you've got your donuts. There's a certain minimum number of ingredients you need to make a donut work. Now, in the same way, to do with life, as far as there being like accidental processes and so on, the gentleman that we had on the screen before, Michael B, he came up with an idea, and he said, do you know, to do with life, you can't think of getting life just from random processes. And he sort of used this as the little story to tell to people. He said, if you just sort of consider, you want to make a mousetrap. Now, a mousetrap doesn't have too many parts to it. And you may have heard this being talked about before. So you've got the platform to put things on, and a hold down bar and the hammer and the spring and the catch. And you've got a little spot there to put the cheese. He said, if you had any one of those pieces were missing, any one piece, you don't actually have a mousetrap. It might be close to being looking like a mousetrap, but it's not actually going to work. It doesn't happen. In fact, if you've got a whole heap of platforms and a whole heap of catches, you can have millions and millions and millions of them. And you can just sort of keep shaking them all together. And you ask people, how long would it take, do you think, in shaking them all together before we would make a mousetrap out of that? And people actually know you're not going to get one. You can't really expect to get one, can you? But there's a certain minimum amount of gear that you need just to make something simple like a mousetrap. By random shuffling, shaking, we're not really going to get a mousetrap. And yet people try to tell us that by some random shuffling and shaking, in the end they're going to end up with you and me. It doesn't happen. I want to look at a couple of little videos so you can see. Now, mousetrap's really, really simple. We looked just at the blood clotting, but we suggested there's a whole heap still going on elsewhere. To do with our DNA. A lot of people just thought, oh, this little sort of fine thread of things, it's sort of there, it does something for us. Yeah, somehow it carries information. There's all sorts behind it. And we just want to have a look, a little bit of DNA. Now, for DNA and for you to grow and to be healthy, all of your cells need to reproduce themselves. They need to be able to duplicate. You've got to be able to make more DNA. To make more DNA, you've got to start with DNA. And so you've got a pattern of things, and then you're going to use it and make more. You're going to read your own DNA to be able to say, oh, that's the pattern for making more. We want to have a little look, just a couple of videos, about some processes that are involved with that.
Using computer animation based on molecular research, we are now able to see how DNA is actually copied in living cells. You are looking at an assembly line of amazing miniature biochemical machines that are pulling apart the DNA double helix and cranking out a copy of each strand. The DNA to be copied enters the production line from bottom left. The whirling blue molecular machine is called helicase. It spins the DNA as fast as a jet engine as it unwinds the double helix into two strands. One strand is copied continuously and can be seen spooling off to the right. Things are not so simple for the other strand because it must be copied backwards. It is drawn out repeatedly in loops and copied one section at a time. The end result is two new DNA molecules.
Wow. Wow. There's so much that's not shown in that, that's still necessary to make all of that work. Who came up with the idea? Oh, that would be a good way of replicating everything, all the information in you about who you are, everything from skin colour to whether you've got curly hair to whatever else there is about you. Accidentally, oh, we found a piece of this and that and sort of shook it together and that's what we got. It doesn't work that way. I want to put one more quick video on, because it sort of links back a little bit just to do with the things to do with blood that we saw before. We know that with our blood, and we've got our red blood cells that carry around our body, and they've got to get oxygen to every single cell in our body. This is an amazing network. We've all got to be able to carry the carbon dioxide away. You've got to have all of these mechanisms. Now, from our DNA, And we're really only very much just touching these things today, that's for sure. From the DNA, there's able to read it and, as it were, make a little bit of a tape and says, oh, well, here's some information about how to make some other things that you need. What we'll do is we'll send that tape off to some other machinery that just happens to be there, all waiting and ready to go. We'll feed in that as a set of instructions and just all the other things that we've managed to gather together from the things that you eat and put together and just sort of manage to arrange it just in the right sort of way that we're able to get this happen.
When the RNA copy is complete, it snakes out into the outer part of the cell. Then, in a dazzling display of choreography, all the components of a molecular machine lock together around the RNA to form a miniature factory called a ribosome. It translates the genetic information in the RNA into a string of amino acids that will become a protein. Special transfer molecules, the green triangles, bring each amino acid to the ribosome. The amino acids are the small red tips attached to the transfer molecules. There are different transfer molecules for each of the 20 amino acids. Each transfer molecule carries a three-letter code that is matched with the RNA in the machine. Now we come to the heart of the process. Inside the ribosome, the RNA is pulled through like a tape. The code for each amino acid is read off, three letters at a time, and matched to three corresponding letters on the transfer molecules. When the right transfer molecule plugs in, the amino acid it carries is added to the growing protein chain. Again, you are watching this in real time. And after a few seconds, the assembled protein starts to emerge from the ribosome. Ribosomes can make any kind of protein. It just depends what genetic message you feed in on the RNA. In this case, the end product is hemoglobin. The cells in our bone marrow churn out 100 trillion molecules of it per second. And as a result, our muscles, brain, and all the vital organs in our body receive the oxygen they need.
A 100 trillion per second. That's just hemoglobin. What about all the other things that are being manufactured in our bodies at the same time as well? An accidental process? I think not. Accidental nonsense of a high order. Sorry, Pastor, I didn't check the time when I started. There is one other video. Is all okay? Approval granted. That's fantastic. There's a whole heap of things that people wonder about our body, and people more and more are looking and seeing everything that we think of to do with the body as evidence of God's design. Amazing design. We want to look at one more video, and it's just it's quite a neat little one, and it's just talking about the human brain and about the idea of how much that's evidence that there's a designer behind everything.
The answer to this question can be seen in the clear evidence of design all around us, especially in the human brain. Did you know? The brain is an extremely complex organ. It controls thought, emotion, memory, motor skills, vision, touch, temperature, breathing, hunger, and every process that regulates the body. If you were to look at a piece of brain tissue, and it was the size of a grain of sand, you would see that it contains 1 billion synapses and 100,000 neurons. What's even more amazing, they're all in communication with each other. The storage capacity of the brain is virtually unlimited. There are around 86 billion neurons in the human brain, and each neuron forms connections with other neurons. This could equate up to 1 quadrillion, 1,000 trillion connections. These neurons can combine over time, which can increase storage capacity. No computer on earth can do this. The information in your brain can travel up to 268 miles per hour. The stimulation of a neuron generates electrical impulses, and this travels from cell to cell. Your human brain is able to generate about 23 watts of power, which is enough wattage to power a light bulb. The brain is simply amazing. With all of the power and functions going on to enable our bodies to work, it really is the most unusual and amazing part of our bodies. From the number of neurons firing to the storage system used by the brain, it's truly incredible. On top of that, the human brain controls the even more complex systems of the entire human body. It is quite obvious that the human brain was designed by a super intelligent engineer. When you look at its complexity and what it does to be the command control of the whole body, there is simply no way that this could have happened on its own. The evolutionary story is that the human brain developed from less complex organisms over a long period of time without any intelligence or mind behind this. There is, of course, no observable evidence for this, as it's all conjecture. It's a fabricated tale. Think about this. How did the human brain, which is the command center of the body, develop by itself and decide to control and communicate with the other parts of the body? How did the other parts of the body function before the development of the brain? How did the brain function when other essential parts, such as the heart, circulatory system, and other systems, need to be there for the brain to work? How did the human brain, with no intelligence behind it, learn to generate its own electricity to create electrical impulses which aid in the transmission of information to other parts of the body? How did the human brain, with no intelligence behind it, decide to develop an unlimited storage system in which neurons can combine over time, which can increase storage capacity? How did the human brain, which has the ability to think and reason, design itself without the need for another more intelligent brain to create it? How did purely natural processes, which do not think and cannot reason, cause the human brain, which can think and can reason? You see, when you simply think and use your brain, it's quite obvious that the human brain could not have developed on its own. There had to be a superintelligence, a master engineer to develop such an amazing thing as the human brain. To believe that something as complex as the human brain could have developed by itself, with no intelligence behind it, is beyond absurd. It takes a lot of faith to believe this. Blind, mindless chance cannot create the complexity and design we see in the human brain.
Albert Einstein said, anyone who's actually seriously interested in the pursuit of science, they become convinced that there's a spirit that's manifest in the laws of the universe. You know, there's something behind it all. A spirit that's vastly superior to man, and the one in the face of which our modest powers, we must feel humble, and we should. Just on donuts, just to finish on things here. Should you eat a donut? Well, do you have a donut? Yes, we'll eat it. If you don't, we'll get a donut. Then eat that donut. Another little bit of advice. In a span of 11 years, there's 115 people died in a weightlifting accident in the gym. In the same 11 years, only one person died eating a donut. Make good choices, folks. Make good choices today, okay? Do you want to live forever? Are you spirit-filled? Yes. Well, enjoy that eternal life. No? Well, get spirit-filled and then enjoy that eternal life. As well as for anybody here, when you think about, you know, where is God and what are we, you know, can we actually find him? Well, a little challenge from the scriptures. Well, he that planted the ear, wouldn't he be able to hear you? And he that formed the eye, wouldn't he be able to see you? He's able to do everything for us. And this says the Lord, he created the heavens. He makes that claim again. He created them. He stretched them out. He spread forth the earth which comes upon it. He gives breath to the people that are upon it and spirit to them that walk therein. There are actually dozens and dozens and dozens of scriptures you can find where it's very obvious God's the creator of all things. But for all of us, maybe our level, our whole occupation in life, when will we get our next donut? That's not what we're really after. We believe that God's the creator of all things. How it all came about, we weren't there to see it. But by faith we do believe that the things that we do see weren't made of things that did exist before. He just spoke them all into being. He brought us into being, and he's got lots of ways that he says, and what am I going to do with my creation? If you have it, I'll bless you. Amen.